Let's turn our attention back to Genesis chapter 21, and we will start in, verse number 22, which is the story of how the city of Beersheba gets established with its name. And this is the way that it happened. And it says, at that time, which means right after the Ishmael departing from the Abrahamic community at the site of Beersheba has occurred. At that time, Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, so Phicol means all mouth, and it seems to be the eventual title for the military commander of Gerar. And then Abimelech seems to be the title for the kingship. Abimelech means my father is king, so it seems to be a hereditary thing. So these two guys come up the watershed from the city of Gerar, which is down by the Med. They follow the stream bed road up to the place where Abraham has set up his tent city and where he's running his sheep all over the area nearby. And they are drinking at wells that they've dug at key places in this region. And all this was done at the permission of Abimelech. He said, my land is in front of you. Go and pick a place and make yourself to home. And so now that some time has passed, and it's been several years apparently, Abimelech comes for a visit and says, God is clearly with you in all that you do. Now therefore, swear to me here today at this site, by God, that you will not deal falsely with me or with my descendants or with my posterity, but as I have dealt kindly with you, so you will deal with me and with the land where you have sojourned. Now, it is interesting that this treaty includes a little bit of a chiding that you're not going to, lie to me anymore. Because remember, that's how their relationship got started, is by him saying that Sarah was his sister when in fact she was his wife. And that's why Abimelech thought that he could, just assume he could take Sarah as a new wife himself. And so they got off on the wrong foot through all of that. And Abimelech says, don't be doing that anymore. So I want you to make a promise to me that you're not going to do that to me anymore. You're not going to do that to any of my descendants. That your descendants will treat my descendants with such kindness and thoughtfulness. And we will have this mutual assistance treaty where we will get along. And Abraham is all on that. He's good with that. Abraham says, I will swear that. And when Abraham reproved Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized, so apparently now that they've agreed that this is going to be a mutual assistance relationship, Abraham says, well, since we're talking about such things, I've got a problem with some of your people claiming that a well that my people dug is not ours, it's yours. So Abimelech said back, I don't know who's done this thing, you didn't tell me about it, and I've not heard about it until today. So Abimelech says, don't know anything about the story, but sounds to me like it's your well. You dug it. It's in your region for your tent city. So, no, my guys should not be stopping your people from controlling that. And so this becomes the core of this mutual assistance treaty, this friendship treaty between the king of Gerar, the king of the Gerar watershed. We should make that point. And when I'm talking about the watershed, I'm talking about there's this stream that goes past the city of Gerar, which is probably a couple of miles from the Mediterranean coast. And if you follow that upstream, not just simply where the water is actively running all the time, but the wadis, the wet weather streams, that's the watershed. So all the drainage basin of this stream of Gerar. The city of Beersheba, where it's located today, is sitting on one of those feeding tributaries of this stream that goes past ancient Gerar. And so what's happening is Abraham seems to be in control of that particular branch of the drainage basin. And Abimelech is agreeing that that is now going to be a long-term lease, a long-term agreement of control. And so, verse 27, Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a covenant. So the exchanging of animals in sacrificial form. We've seen this before. In fact, the term cutting a covenant gets its name from this idea that the two people would walk between the bloody pieces. The implication was, if I don't keep the terms of this agreement, may I be bloodied. And so they do this covenant and make promises to each other in the midst of this. And so that's what they're making here at Beersheba. And verse 28, Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock apart. So he brings 7 female lambs as something special at this point in the ceremony. And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What's the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs that you've set apart?" And he said, "These 7 ewe lambs you will take from my hand, that this may be a witness for me that I dug this specific well." All right, so these lambs are to be a testimony between the two men and the witnesses that see this happen, that this particular well at Abraham's tent city location, that this is Abraham's well. He dug it, he has control of it, and Abimelech's men don't get to come in and say that they're in control of it. And so verse number 31, therefore that place was called Beersheba, because there both of them swore an oath. So Ber, B-E-E-B-E-E-R, that's the Hebrew word for a well. Sheba can mean 7, or an oath, or in this case, both, because this is the well of the 7 sheep oath. And that's how Beersheba got its name. And there is to this day a well in the community of Beersheba that is claimed to be this very well. I think some private individual had bought it up at some point. I don't know if it's still in the hands of a private individual or whether or not it might be available for people to visit. But it's down in an area that is not really tourist-friendly, and so you don't get down there. So they made a covenant at Beersheba, And then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Now, that's a bit of a spoiler name, because that will be the name that the Israelis kind of start knowing it by, because there will be Philistines, at least in small numbers, living there in the time that they enter the Promised Land. It just means down on the coast, down by Gaza. Gaza is one of the cities that used to belong to the Philistines. And then verse 33, Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba. So he plants a specific type of tree, and he called there on the name of He who is the everlasting God. So this matches what we've seen him do before, and that is make a worship site where his tent city is located. And this tree marks that site. And this is why Beersheba is, to this very day, still such an important city for Israeli people, because it is one of the cities first established by Abraham. Verse 34, and Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines, which again is kind of a reference to the idea that he's on this watershed that drains to the coast, and the coastline will eventually be associated with the Philistines. And so it's kind of like talking about the pilgrims coming and living in the United States. We know what they mean by that, but it's kind of jumping ahead of the actual meaning of the names. Chapter 22. Now we come to a really big event. After these things, God tested Abraham. Now, those of you that have been Christians for a while or have been studying the Bible a while, you already know that this is going to be the story of the near sacrifice of Yitzhak. And unfortunately, many, many people picture Yitzhak as a little bitty boy, little bitty child, when this story takes place. I've always had my doubts about that. And in my adult studies, I have come to find out that with the Jewish people, their tradition is that he was about 25, I think, when this event happened. And so that's how I want you to picture it as we go through it, is that this story is coming up 25 years after the birth of Isaac. And it is not just simply Abraham that exercises some faith here, but so does Isaac himself. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, remember his name means father of a multitude. And the promise that God had given to Abraham when he gave him that name is, in your seed, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed, and your seed is going to be so numerous that it'll be like trying to count the stars of the sky or the sand on the seashore. You won't want to try to do it. So the seed promise that led to his name being the father of a multitude is all bound up in this young man, Yitzhak, who is not married and who has no children. It is important for you to understand that. So Abraham has got his name called, and he said, here I am. Verse 2, he said, take your son, your only son, your beloved son is something that the Greek Old Testament points out here. In other passages, this should be understood as the monogenēs, which in the Old King James Bible was only begotten. Some people think that, you know, it'd have the idea of the only physically generated son, but that doesn't make any sense for Isaac because he has an older half-brother that came from Abraham, and he has younger half-brothers that come from his father Abraham. So he's not the only begotten. So the more proper understanding of only begotten is one of a kind. And so we have some of our newer English Bible versions. When they talk about Jesus being the only begotten Son of God, they say the one of a kind, or the unique, or the one and only, as in the heir, Son of God. All right, so back to the story here. So take your son, your only son, meaning the son of the promise, not Ishmael, Yitzhak, whom you love, go to the land of Moriah. Now, this is a jumping ahead of the name for this place. I will come back and explain the name later, but understand this was not its name at this time. That comes because of this story. So go to this specific land and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Now that had to come as a big shock, surprise, and challenge to Abraham, huh? That God would suddenly say, I want you to make a human sacrifice. Human sacrifices did happen in certain ancient societies, but you tended to sacrifice people that didn't matter to you. In this case, he is being asked to sacrifice somebody that is exceptionally important to him. And this is why it's so imperative that we understand Abraham's thinking process. And we get that from the book of Hebrews, chapter number 11, starting at verse 17, which tells us why his faith is so emblematic by this event. And so this is what it says in Hebrews 11:17. By faith, when Abraham was tested, he offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises, remember the promises about the seed, both the blessing that comes through the seed and the fact that the seed would be innumerable. So he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, emphasize there, the only one that this prophecy could come to pass through, of whom he had said, through Yitzhak shall your offspring be named. So here's the thing. Here's the thinking process of Abraham. God told me that through Isaac, the seed would be named. Isaac has no children. If God wants me to sacrifice Isaac and still wants to keep his promises that my seed through Isaac will be a blessing and will be innumerable, he'll have to raise him from the dead. That's the thinking of Abraham. He trusted God's promise that he would bless him and give him innumerable seed through Isaac. And so if God wants him to sacrifice Isaac, God has to bring him back to life again to keep the promise. So that's why in verse number 19, the writer of Hebrews says, he considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead. So that is the thinking process of Abraham at this point in our story back in Genesis 22. So Abraham rose early in the morning. He saddled his donkey. He took two of his young men with him and his son Yitzhak, who by Jewish tradition is about 25. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and he arose and he went to the place of God, which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. So it is 2 days travel, you know, because he prepped a little bit on the first day and then traveled and then traveled again, and he arrived on the third day. So it's basically 2 days travel north. And it is pretty much understood that we're talking about Jerusalem, where he was going. Now, there is a city called Salem that is on the site of Jerusalem at this time. It's the city where we have Melchizedek, priest of God Most High. He lives in this city. In fact, he may have actually established the city. But the city of Jerusalem is a little small oval hill south of what we call the Temple Mount today. If you go to Israel, it's the City of David. Archaeological Park is the city of Salem, the city of Abraham's time. It wasn't monstrous, and it seems as if the tradition of the Jewish people is that Abraham was taking Isaac to the Temple Mount area to sacrifice him, up on the hill above the city of Salem. I'm going to suggest to you that he took him a little bit farther along that same ridgeline to the place that later gets the name the place of the skull. Verse number 4. So on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and he saw the place from afar. So God has described it to him, and Abraham recognizes it, and now he is prepared to go there. Now, again, I think that we're talking about Golgotha, the place of the skull. I think Abraham had been told to look for the place that looks like the face of a skull. The Jewish people traditionally think that he was told to look for a rock that was up on the top of the Temple Mount, the rock that is now under the Dome of the Rock, the golden dome that's on the Temple Mount. The Muslims also seem to be along that same idea, although I think they think Ishmael was the one. But I'll have to double-check that. So verse number 5, then Abraham said to his young men, you guys stay here with the donkey. I and the boy, it's actually young man, is the more literal understanding, will go over there and worship and come again to you. Now notice his faith. We'll be back. This is a private moment. We're going to go over there somewhere, and then we'll come back. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering. He laid it on Isaac, his son. So he had Isaac carry this bundle of dry wood. And then he took in his hand the fire, meaning probably a little pottery container that had hot coals in it, because that was one of the ways you transported fire. And he took that and the knife, and so they both of them went together. And Yitzhak said to his father, famously said to his father on the way to this site, my father, and he said, here I am, my son. He said, behold, we've got the fire, we've got the wood, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? So he's a little bit confused. He's like, where's the animal that we're going to use? And Abraham said to him, now the wording here is very important. God will see to it himself. That's the literal wording. Our English Standard Version that we're using right now says, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. But it's basically Abraham saying, God will take care of that. Now, that's Abraham's faith. Speaking out with what we just read from Hebrews a little while ago. God is providing the sacrifice and taking care of everything. God is seeing to it. And so they both of them went together. And when they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and then laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Now this is where you have to imagine Isaac clearly understands what's about to happen now. He doesn't fight his dad. This is emphasized in the Jewish material. He doesn't fight his dad. He has the ability to overpower his dad. He sees what's about to happen and trusts his dad. And so there's just as much faith of Isaac in this story as there is of Abraham. Now, how much did Abraham tell him? I mean, did he say, look, God told me to offer you as a sacrifice. I'm telling you, he promised us that you would also have kids. You don't have any kids. For him to keep his promise, you can't stay dead. He has to bring you back to life. And so with that thought in mind, we kind of wrap up today. I want you to kind of chew on all of that and think about how this is connected to the story of Jesus as well.